Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive.
Hello, Cassie and my friends over there somewhere on the other side of this microphone. It's the holiday season.
That's a song.
Da, 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 and what do you do and something la, da, 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 da. Happy holidays.
Aww. We'll start every episode from here on out for the rest of the month with a new song rendition for you guys.
Perfect. I think that was a good one. I think the people will be grateful for that one. It's gonna be a fun day. Let me just say it's gonna be an interesting
I'm
one.
Pumped. These are like my favorite. These are the episodes I look forward to the most.
Oh, I'm glad
the
you're excited.
Mean one, Grinch horror. Actually, I just saw the Grinch musical on in Milwaukee, like on stage last weekend. So this is going to be an interesting turnaround.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So did you do anything in this past week horror related or?
I've had like a very horror free week, unfortunately. Aww. For us. Sad. I took off filming a horror reaction last week for Thanksgiving. So I didn't end up watching any horror outside of that. I don't think, I hate to say it, I'm a little bit in the mood for like a Christmas Hallmark movie, which is very, very unlike me. But like the last 2 years or so, I don't know if it's just being 28 and like there's the rule about having to like Hallmark movies when you reach a certain age, but I've been needing the comfort and they're so bad and it's so good.
Wait, this is like, okay, I hate us. Because I dead ass, like the past 2 years, I've been the same way. I've binged like Hallmark garbage Christmas movies the past 2 years.
Why? And did you hate them like before that?
I did, but like they're really comforting.
Yeah.
The stupid rom-commy Hallmark movies, like they make me feel something.
And there's always a bake shop and it's really nice.
Yes. Okay. That's I love this for us. Amazing.
My only other horror this week was this morning when my alarm didn't go off.
Oh yeah. I get a text from Cassie at literally at 10:29. It just says Caitlin in all caps. And I'm like, oh my God, what happened? I thought something crazy was going on, but she was just
It was crazy.
It was crazy for you. And I was just like, oh, okay, take your time. It's good. We chilling.
Yeah. I threw myself together in like 10 minutes and we were just started 10 minutes late, which is fine. But it's scary because my alarm was like going on my phone, but there was just no sound that came with my alarm this time, which isn't the most helpful when you're trying to wake up.
Nope, that's happened to me too. So for me, I have been in a Pennywise universe and I'm still watching Welcome to Derry. I think episode 5 was the best episode of the season so far and I'm very excited about it. Very excited. Episode 6 just came out. I haven't watched that one yet, but like it's good. I love it. On the other side of things, I also watched It from 1990, which is, you know, a movie / miniseries / whatever you want to call it.
I haven't seen it. But I've heard that it's like, it seems like it's the type of thing where it's only scary and you're only going to be scarred if you're 8 years old in the 90s.
Yes.
Yeah. And it just doesn't really hold, like it's cool, but it doesn't like hold up as scary anymore.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I was intrigued because some people were like, oh yeah, Tim Curry's like Pennywise is so scary. And like, it's just a very different Pennywise because he plays more of a clown, whereas like Bill Skarsgård plays more of like a monster. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
And it's like pretty dry and pretty slow and not super high quality. And a lot of the acting performances are not great. Like it's something. I'm glad I finally watched it because like I do love it. I do love Pennywise. So I kind of felt like a fake fan, you know, not having seen that version. But of all the Pennywise media that I have consumed, this is definitely my least favorite. Sorry to say.
Yeah. I'd probably fall on the same boat. But I got to watch that too, just because, we love horror. And Pennywise is just a staple and you got to watch the Tim Curry version.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that's it for us for our week in horror. Now we're going to talk about, I guess, a horror movie. If it's a horror movie. It's a horror movie called The Mean One. And I'm assuming most of you, if you're here, you at least looked it up. Maybe you hadn't heard of this one, but I'm sure you looked it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you know exactly what's about to happen. Now, this movie was directed by Stephen LaMorte. He also directed Screamboat, which is the Mickey Mouse
horror movie. Which we just need to cover one day. Or you're like, after this one, I don't know.
Listen, I do love these, even though they're, I'm not going to say they're good, but
yeah,
they're a good time.
Right.
They're a good time. This was written by Flip and Finn Kobler. So I guess they're brothers. They have the same last name, Flip and Finn.
Oh, I thought that was all one name. Oh. Flip and Finn. And I was like, wow, what a name.
What a name. No, Flip and Finn. The interesting thing, Cassie, that I cannot quite figure out. Mm-hmm. So the Grinch obviously belongs to Dr. Seuss.
Right.
The Grinch is very much still under copyright law until 2062.
Mm.
So this is entirely unauthorized, unlicensed. And apparently, like, I read that Dr. Seuss's estate is extremely strict. So I do not know how they got away with this.
I know. It's a pretty big movie for what it is, too. It's not under the radar by any means.
No, it's not. So I don't know. There's got to be something that I'm missing. Like, because I can't imagine them being like, yeah, go ahead, do that. Like, the estate. So I find that very interesting. The budget was around $250,000 and made $1 million in the box office. So.
Whoa.
Yeah. Successful.
That's way more successful than I expected.
Yeah. Very successful for what it is. And I'm sorry. This is not intentional, everyone. But this movie does star David Howard Thornton as the mean one. It's not intentional. I'm sorry. Here we are again.
If I knew that, I completely forgot. This is so funny. Of course he is. Like, of course he is.
No, like, this is the perfect role for him. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
So we're going to head on in. The film opens on an overhead shot of a very small town late one winter night. Light, twinkly music plays as we float over a beautifully decorated street. It's Christmas time, believe it or not. We land upon a sweet-looking home, and there's a train going by at the home. So that's just a sound effect that we're using. We've leveled up, guys. There's just...
Oh my gosh. You guys would be shocked by how many trains are in horror. Like, it's its own trope.
Yeah. So if
you just don't even realize it.
That's just because there's a train in the movie. So we land upon a sweet looking home, and inside there is a Christmas tree, presents, lights, perfectly decorated Hallmark vibes, which I guess we would enjoy that too, based on our previous conversation. A cute girl in little kitten slippers and her PJs tiptoes down the stairs, and we can hear some rustling coming from the living room. A narrator comes in now. Remember that story about Cindy, you know who? When her Christmas.
Okay, we're here.
We're here.
That's a pretty good, it's a good twist. It's fun.
It works. When her Christmas was stolen, she knew what to do. Now, Santa stands in the living room with his back toward us. He's rifling through his sack, and Cindy slowly approaches him. She gives him a little tap on the shoulder, and he turns to face her. We don't see his face yet. Why, Santa Claus? She asks. Santa gives her a tap on the head and then shooes her away. But instead of leaving, Cindy takes off her Santa necklace that she's wearing and goes to put it around Santa's neck. She killed him with kindness in surprisiest of surprises, the narrator says as Cindy gives Santa a kiss on the cheek. I forgive you, she says. That one simple kiss made his heart grow three sizes. They love their Christmas, those folks down in town, but what if I said, that's not how it went down? The opening sequence rewinds, and we again see Cindy placing the necklace on Santa's neck, but this time, Mom walks in the room. She immediately panics and yells, get away from my daughter! Mom picks up a fairly large nutcracker decoration and starts swinging it at Santa. And she's able to whack him like a good six times.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's pretty impressive. Cindy runs to the staircase where she watches her mom and Santa going at it. Cindy, get back. He's a monster, Mom yells, still using that nutcracker as a weapon. Unfortunately, on her final blow, she drops the nutcracker. Santa swings his sack at her and she falls backward. She falls onto the Nutcracker, which happened to have a nail sticking out of it. And she landed right on that nail with her neck because that's convenient.
Okay. Are we rewinding again?
The deed has been done, and now it's too late. And that one alteration turned love into hate. Monster, Cindy screams, and it literally echoes as we cut to black.
Oh.
So that is our opening sequence.
I can't lie to you. I don't know what just happened.
And that's like, so valid.
Wait, did Cindy try to kill him in the first one?
No.
What happened in the first one?
In the first one, she just went up to him and she said, "I forgive you," and gave him a necklace and kissed him on the cheek.
Okay. So she didn't pull that necklace any type of way.
No, it's just a necklace she put on him.
Oh, okay. I think when you said it, I was like too horror brained and I was like, oh, so she's killing him.
No, there is a line there. And the same thing happened to me when I watched it. She killed him with kindness.
Yeah. But then I was just like, oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then kisses him on the cheek. Some brief opening credits play over. Yes, a shot of a car driving down a middle of nowhere road surrounded by snow.
It feels like it's been a minute, actually. Yeah. This is comforting.
It's very comforting. A monster was loose, both hated and hater. Now let's find our Cindy nearly 20 years later. Well, she's in that car decorated with antlers and a Rudolph nose. She sits in the passenger seat and her dad, Lou, drives. She and her dad are joyfully singing Christmas songs. Lou in a Santa hat, Cindy in a Christmas sweater. They drive by a sign that says, "Welcome to Newville," and Cindy's mood switches up a little bit. You're going to be okay, trauma. Her dad asks. Yeah, right. Dr. Brink thinks I need to do this, she says. Maybe get some closure. They're back in their hometown, the place her mother had been killed all those years ago. A police car pulls off from a side road up behind them and turns on its sirens. Cindy and Lou, LOL, I watched the entire movie without realizing their names really? Were Cindy and Lou. And it wasn't until I wrote the script, I was like, oh my God, I hate myself.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're both confused as to what's going on because they weren't speeding or anything. But this officer pulls them over and a young officer named Deputy Burke approaches the driver's side window. "Good afternoon, folks," he says. Now, Cindy and this cop, their eyes meet right here, and it's just, woof, love at first sight.
Oh,
They stare for a moment before he goes, "Ma'am?" And Cindy's like, "Ma'am?" Like, she's so offended. She's like,
"Yeah, like, I'm 20 years old. Hello?
Like, what the hell?" Deputy Burke stutters and is like, no, I meant miss. Ha, sorry. Like, ooh, awkward. Mm-hmm. Cindy just smiles and introduces herself. And instead of saying anything at all, he just stares at her, smiling. Finally, Dad just leans forward, breaking their eye contact. "Problem?" he asks. "Well, the problem seems to be their car decorations. The antlers, the nose. They don't allow those here. They're distracting."
Yeah. I've seen people, like, wrap their whole car in lights.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how you get away with that. That's just can't be illegal.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But it looks kind of cool.
It is fun. I do like it. Like, I don't love the, like, antlers and nose, but
sure,
the lights are kind of fun.
I'll never be mad at lights.
Mm-mm. Cindy and Lou find that weird, but conversation continues, and we learn that they're in town to finally sell the family home. "The therapist thinks it's time," Lou says to Deputy Burke, and Cindy's like, "Dad, like, what? Hello? You know, get some closure," he continues anyway. Cindy's just like, "Dad, like, why are we sharing this? This is not the time."
Yeah.
And then Lou whispers, "PTSD," like really loudly. Oh my God.
Why? Why are we like this?
Okay, Dad, that's enough. Cindy leads over, putting a hand on her dad's shoulder with an exaggerated smile. "If I kill him, will you be a character witness?" she asks Deputy Burke. He just laughs, saying, "Let's try to get through the holidays with no dead bodies."
Yeah.
He lets them off with a warning. He lets them off with a warning and heads back to his cruiser, muttering to himself about his horrible flub of an interaction there. "He's cute," Lou says once he's walked away. And Cindy's like, "Oh my God, Dad," as if she wasn't making it super obvious the whole time.
Right.
A little later, Cindy and Lou walk up to their old home. Going inside, we can see that the place is still fully furnished and the furniture is all covered in sheets. Cindy wanders into the living room where she hears a shuffling sound coming from within the fireplace. She decides to get a closer look and is, of course, jump scared by a bird flying out of the opening.
Of course.
She screams and her dad comes running in to see what the problem is. Cindy just breaks down in tears, and Lou thinks maybe this is too much. They can go stay at a motel or something.
Mm-hmm.
Cindy insists she can do it. She needs to face these memories. Okay.
Well, you can face them at the motel.
I think that's a great idea. This does not, like, why are we back in this living room where you saw the most traumatic thing?
Right. Exposure therapy is not necessary here.
Not
okay.
Here. Okay. Well, let's get some sleep, Dad says. And then tomorrow, we're going to get some Christmas spirit in here, okay? Later that night, Cindy sleeps in her bed as we hear creaks and shudders from around the house. In a small desk mirror, like it's an interesting shot, we see a shadowy hand appear above Cindy's bed. Kind of Grinchy looking.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, an actual Grinchy hand comes from around the side of her bed, covering her mouth. But we quickly realize it was a dream as she sits up in bed and screams.
Yeah.
Lou comes running in with a bat, calling for his daughter. And once he sees that she's all right, he asks, "Did you see the monster again?" "There's no such thing as monsters, Dad," Cindy responds as Lou takes a seat next to his daughter on the bed. He grabs her hands and holds her while she recovers from her nightmare.
Okay, wait, this is interesting. They don't know that I can call him the Grinch, right? Do they call him Grinch?
Okay, so they don't.
Okay, just the mean one.
Yeah, I wrote the mean one in the script because I'm worried.
I don't know. I don't know either.
It's not our fault.
So they don't know that the mean one is real in this universe. Like, he's just like, there's no such thing as monsters, you know?
Well, interestingly, her dad asks her if she saw the monster, and she's the one who says there's no such thing as monsters. So...
Okay, so maybe he does believe, but it's more of like a legend. It's not like a fact.
It's we're gonna get more into it.
Okay,
about what the thought process is around this mean one.
Yeah, maybe she's just in denial.
Could be. The next day, Cindy sits at a table alone at what seems to be a small local diner. A woman hangs up a poster on the bulletin board, and when she turns around, we can see that it's her picture on the poster. Re-elect Mayor McBean, it says. She also wears a shirt with the same poster on it. She's going to go full politician mode here as she walks over to another woman sitting alone in scrubs. She places a sticker on her shirt without asking. "Come on out and vote for a brighter tomorrow," she says with a cheesy grin. This woman is unamused. Mayor Margie McBean walks over to Cindy now. And when she gets closer, a look of recognition and fear spreads across her face. So she just walks on by.
Tea.
The chimes ring at the door, and Deputy Burke walks in with the sheriff. He heads straight for Cindy and wishes her a good morning. "Where's your dad?" he asks. "Oh, he's off buying every Christmas decoration he can find," she answers. The sheriff walks up now, and a similar look to that of Mayor McBean takes over his face. Cindy has a similar reaction as their eyes meet. "Sheriff Cooper," she says.
Mm-hmm.
A small flashback plays here of the night her mother died, and a younger Sheriff Cooper speaks to little Cindy outside her home. "This is who you saw hurt Mommy?" he asks, holding up a drawing of Cindy's. "It's a drawing of the mean one." She nods. "He was green?" the sheriff asks. She nods again. "We found this outside," he says, holding up a green ski mask. "Whoever did this must have dropped it."
Okay.
He asks Cindy to redraw the man... he emphasizes, "who did this. Because you're a big, brave girl. And big, brave girls know that monsters aren't real."
Wow.
He even forces her to say it with him. Monsters aren't real.
Mm-hmm.
So she was very much told as a child, which, to be fair, I'm not, like, mad at him.
No.
You know?
I was just curious about, like, the universe that we're in here, just because obviously, the OG story is very much in, like, a fantasy setting.
Right.
So I was like, are they going to continue with that, or is it going to be, like, real life? Mm-hmm. And that answers that.
Flashback to real time. "Did you ever find the Christmas killer?" Cindy asked the sheriff directly, which to me is hilarious because, like, don't you think you would know about that? If they found
your
mother's killer, yeah. I don't know.
It's been like 20 years. You found him, right? Hello?
The sheriff responds with a shrug, "Never got a reliable description of the man."
Oh my God.
Wild.
What?
Wild.
That's so rude. Oh my gosh. I want him to be the mean one somehow. That would be a fun twist. Mm-hmm. Because I hate him. Just because I hate him, I want him to be a monster.
Fair. I like that. So Lou barges into the diner now, and this man is at a complete loss. There are no Christmas decorations being sold anywhere in town.
Oh.
Appalling, truly. Lou and Cindy decide to head on home, and as they make their way for the door, the sheriff fills the deputy in on what's up with Cindy. Her mother was killed and her mind snapped, he says.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like the deputy's opinion on her is going to change based on that.
Mm-hmm.
So later that night, back home, both Lou and Cindy are wearing Christmas sweaters, singing Christmas songs again. And Lou comes down from the attic with a cardboard box. It's some leftover Christmas decor he found from years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say we make some nog, put up these lights, and bring some cheer to this sleepy little town?
Yeah.
Cindy smiles at him with a nod. Thus ensues a nice long montage of the two of them having a blast while putting up decorations.
Mm-hmm.
After the house is looking so Christmassy, there is some cleanup to be done. Lou holds up a bag of trash and gives Cindy a knowing look. They immediately break out into rock, paper, scissors, and Cindy loses, so she has to take out the trash.
Okay, cute. They have a nice relationship.
They do. It is very cute. Cindy walks outside, down the front steps, over to the trash can. As she opens the lid, we hear a loud, crunchy footstep behind her, and when we pan up, we catch the slightest glimpse of a figure going in the front door before the door slams shut behind them. Cindy turns around at the sound and wanders back to the front door, but when she goes to open it, it's locked.
Mm-hmm.
Very funny, Dad, she calls through the door. Her face falls slightly when she gets no response. Inside, Dad is still humming Christmas songs when the fireplace just goes out.
Oh.
Because magical fire things.
Yeah.
When he goes to investigate, a silhouetted figure appears over his shoulder. Cindy peeks through the semicircular window on top of the door and sees the lights start flashing and then a loud crash. Lou comes running into the entryway full of fear. Cindy calls through the locked door for her father. Someone's in there, attacking him, but she can't get a good look at who it is. The camera's shaky, but this figure is slicing away at Lou, throwing him against the walls.
Oh my God.
Until suddenly everything goes still. Cindy looks through the window, seeing neither her father or the assailant. Bam! Lou's face is slammed up against the window in front of her.
Oh, are we like at the 50-minute mark right now? I can't what's happening? Is this really happening? I'm not sure if this is really happening.
It's happening.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
So he makes eye contact with Cindy just before a festive-looking glass pole enters through the back of his head, through his eye socket, poking his eye out of his skull and through the glass window next to his daughter.
Okay.
The attacker, don't know who it could be, swipes all the Christmas decor in the home at lightning speed and escapes via the chimney. The door unlocks and Cindy falls on top of her father's dead body, completely distraught. Please don't leave me, she cries before letting out a blood-curdling scream. A scream that carries us through the next shot. And it's her waking up in a hospital bed.
I'm just afraid that they're going to – her mind cracked. They're just not going to believe her, right?
Mm. That might be the case.
Yeah, that's great. This is my
You're gonna be this so is mad.
Okay, I'm gonna be so mad. Let me just take a deep breath now. It's gonna be fine. Uh-huh. This isn't real. This is my horror. This is the scariest part.
A nurse tends to Cindy while the deputy takes down her story.
Mm-hmm.
Our girlie is stressed because she knows what she saw: the green man in the Santa suit. But everyone is looking at her like she's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The deputy assures her that he believes her and says they're going to get a sketch artist in here so everyone can see what she saw. Just then, Mayor McBean arrives with a bouquet of flowers. She's playing up that politician energy hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry for your loss, she says, taking one of her stickers and placing it on the deputy's jacket. Cindy isn't here for this BS. That guy is still out there. What are you going to do about it? She asks angrily, looking right at the mayor. What if it's the same guy? What if the Christmas killer is back? Mayor McBean looks to the deputy and says, not again, under her breath. Cindy completely loses it. What if it's coming for me? It's coming for us. It's going to take our Christmas.
Oh, that's the real horror here. Mm-hmm. It could take our Christmas, you guys.
Not our Christmas.
I'm hoping that the sheriff, if like he's not the mean one, that he at least gets killed by him.
Mm, okay.
That would be a good silver lining to the movie. I don't know why I do this. I just choose to like really actively hate someone in a horror movie and hope that they die. And I'm like, that feels not healthy, but anyways.
I think I do the same thing. So you're good. Yeah. You're so good. The nurse comes back into the room and tries to calm Cindy down until she eventually passes out. Out in the hallway, the deputy and the mayor have a very friendly conversation. Wait, I fucked up this whole scene.
Who is it, the wrong person?
It's the sheriff, not the deputy.
Wait, that's weird. Because I thought it was the sheriff the whole time. That's I just said sheriff. Why did I say sheriff?
Yeah, you did. Okay, guys, everyone, just a heads up. This entire scene was the sheriff and not the deputy.
Yeah, and for some reason I understood. I know Caitlin's mind. I get it.
She just understood. It's fine. We're all good. So the sheriff asks if she thinks it's possible. Could he really be back? The mayor shuts it down. She's dead set on it not being the Christmas killer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is score check one.
Oh, wow. Oh, we're here. We're so here.
We
already
are so here.
I don't like the mayor either. Also, I'm curious about how, like, why the mean one has not hurt anyone since killing her mom. Cindy's mom, because like you would think that they would get reports from other people and be more aware of the situation, even if they didn't think it was a monster, but someone like dressed up in some weird costume, like they'd seem to not be aware of that.
Yes.
So that's weird. I'm excited to get to that motive. Mm-hmm. Like, why did you just randomly kill her mom and then come back and kill her dad 20 years later? Like, what's going on, dude? Anyways. All right, so the mom and the dad, like, that's it, right?
Yeah.
Like, the mom, I guess, she had that nutcracker, and she put it to good use, but he didn't go down.
No, he didn't, not at
all. And then it's like, but it's so convenient how she died, like, falling right on that nail.
Oh, yeah.
So then I don't want to, like, succumb to that fate and be like, well, that would happen to me. You know, like, it could, but I feel like it's not the most likely thing.
Right.
And then the dad, I feel like it was like half of it was like behind the door and it's like chaos that we're not totally seeing.
Exactly. It was mostly just chaos.
So just out of spite for the movie, because everything is so messy right now, I'm going to give myself a 82.
82. All right.
Yeah.
I went 68. I went a little on the lower side, but same kind of vibe. Like,
yeah,
they died. I might die too. I don't know. It was messy.
We just don't know the threat really yet.
Exactly.
It's been too fast and too chaotic.
So a few days later, Cindy goes back to her home for the first time, and she's driven there by the deputy himself. As she goes to unlock the door, she has a violent flashback to her dad's attack that causes her to jump back in fear, back into the deputy's arms.
Oh.
Oh, hey, I got you. I got you. I got you this, he stutters, holding up a thermos. He's so awkward. It's a homemade matzo ball soup. As awkward as the moment is, for no reason, by the way.
Yeah.
Cindy appreciates this gesture and thanks the deputy for everything he did for her. She heads inside, and unfortunately, no one cleaned up the blood, so there's just like a nice puddle of her dad's blood in the entryway.
Okay, someone call up crime scene cleaner. That's a game I've been wanting to play.
Right? Jess plays a lot of that, so
yeah.
I feel like I should play it someday.
That's crazy, though. What do you mean? Like, what do you mean they just left? Okay.
Yeah, so she like walks in and just starts crying.
This town is odd.
She's crying at the sight of her dad's blood on the floor of the entryway.
Of course.
And over at the police station, Mayor McBean has just walked in to the sheriff's office. Madam Mayor, to what do I owe the... She cuts him off. What are we going to do about her? She says coldly.
Oh.
Let her grieve. She's in pain, says the sheriff.
Oh.
And my heart breaks for her, the mayor responds with total sincerity. But I am trying to build a brighter tomorrow, and I cannot do that if she keeps dredging up the past. She clearly only cares about her re-election.
It's not the past. What are you talking about, the past? Her dad just got killed.
Literally like 3 days ago.
Yes.
Before leaving the room, she places a sticker on the sheriff's shirt. A brighter tomorrow, right, Sheriff? He gives her an unconvincing nod, and Mayor McBean begins to leave the room.
Okay, my enemy territory has shifted to the mayor because she's making even the sheriff look nice right now.
Mm-hmm. She sure is.
So absolutely. She's my number one target now.
Fair. She should be. Before going through the doorway, she turns around with a creepy smile. Right?
Oh.
She asks. Yes, ma'am, he responds. Back at home, poor Cindy scrubs the floor, trying to clean away the pool of her father's blood.
Yeah.
When down on the floor, she comes across a small yellow flower, and this seems to set off some kind of alarm bells in her head.
Hmm.
We get a quick shot of an internet webpage that says, visit Newville Mountains, home of the rare loopaloo flower. And like we see a field of those yellow flowers. So Cindy's going to go check that out.
Okay.
Yep. I don't know how we got here, but we're here. So she wanders the hill. She's climbing the rocks and she's searching for signs of the flower. She even pulls out her good old DSLR camera to take some photos.
Oh, wow.
As she sets up a shot, looking through the lens, something runs by lightning fast. Cindy jumps back.
Is it the dog? Is Max here? Is it going to have a different name? Anyways, let me stop. I got too excited.
I wish I could say it was Max, but it's definitely not.
Oh, man.
It's definitely not. I love how I'm like, something runs by and you're like, it's a dog. It has to be a dog. I wish it was a dog too. So
yeah.
So Cindy like jumps back. She's scared. She falls into some sort of ditch. And in the ditch is an old wallet, and Cindy opens it up and takes a peek inside.
Oh.
She finds an ID for a Walter Mulberry. Strange, I suppose. She takes the wallet with her and climbs back out of the ditch. Looking through her camera again, in the distance, she can see a couple being cutesy and Christmassy. A man holds mistletoe above his girlfriend and they kiss. Cindy loves it. Unfortunately, though, Cindy is not the only one watching them. She pans her camera over and sees a large figure in red watching the couple from the trees.
Mm.
It lunges out from the trees and goes straight for the couple.
Yeah.
I do want you to know that at this point, we have still not gotten a clear shot of this creature, but like we know.
Okay. Can you tell yet if it's going to be a man in a suit or an actual creature?
I would say creature.
Not that they're not using more than just a man in the suit on set. Like,
no, they found an actual Grinch. I would say it definitely gives the vibe of an actual creature.
Okay, cool.
Because the way it like moved in the house and stuff, it's more given creature.
Sure. Yes. Okay, I like that.
Yeah. So the creature, yep, it lunges out from the trees, and the camera's very shaky as the mean one slices and dices this couple, and Cindy tries to run over to help them.
Yeah.
She reaches the top of a rock and screams out, "Hey, asshole," because everyone in a horror movie has to scream that. For the first time, the mean one slowly turns around and looks straight at Cindy. We get a lovely view of his face. Basically a very messed up looking Grinch played by, yes, David Howard Thornton.
Yeah.
"You're real," Cindy screams out, throwing a rock right at his head. He roars back at her.
Ooh.
Like it's a nice roaring, screechy sound.
Okay.
Special. I do gotta give Cindy some credit here because she lands like a solid 4 rocks at the mean one's head while screaming,
"Wow,
you're real," like over and over. She's like, "You're real, you're real." Because like she's
Could not be me.
Yeah. No.
I'd be happy to land a shot at all, but 4 straight headshots is crazy.
Mm-hmm. I think I would, quite frankly, I have a feeling for me, the rock would just not reach. It would just be like too far. Like I have no strength in my arms. So.
Yeah.
So the main one runs away and Cindy makes her way over to the couple on the ground. We cut to an ambulance rolling the woman into the back and she's in rough shape, but she has not died. She asks where her boyfriend is, and they inform her that he was helicoptered to a hospital.
Okay.
Fun fact, I filmed my reaction to this movie, and I said I was going to take a shot every time someone died. I thought they both died, and they did not.
Neither.
I didn't realize until I watched it a second time that the guy didn't die, so.
Yeah.
I was in a state, okay? I was already... I was already in a rough place.
This is really exciting, though, because maybe the sheriff, mayor, people will believe what's going on more now that we've got other people involved.
For sure, for sure. So the sheriff and Cindy stand by the woman, and the sheriff asks her to explain to him the man who attacked her. She says she didn't get a good look because her glasses fell off. Cindy's like, but you saw the monster, right? The monster that attacked you, you saw him. And the woman looks confused as hell because she definitely did not see that.
What? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Cindy starts freaking out, kind of like this, like Cassie right now.
Yeah.
She's like, no, you saw it. You had to have seen it. Tell them. You definitely saw it. And the sheriff pulls Cindy to the side and is basically like, okay, you need to chill. She didn't see anything.
Oh, my God.
Cindy pulls out her camera to show the sheriff her proof of the monster. Of course, it is the blurriest photo of all time. And the sheriff's like, okay, yeah, thank you, next. And the sheriff explains, those mountains are federal territory. The feds are going to handle this investigation.
Okay.
Cindy's not satisfied with this. So what? It's just not your problem? She asks angrily. The people of this town are my problem. I'm sworn to protect them. Even from you, he responds. You ended Christmas with your crazy ravings about a monster. Things haven't been the same here since, and it's clearly all her fault. He doesn't want to hear anything more about monsters. When the sheriff walks away, Cindy pleads with Burke to help her, the deputy. She shows him the wallet she found and says there are others up there as well. That's strange, right? Just a bunch of wallets. Now, we didn't see the other wallets. I guess she saw them. I don't know.
Okay.
I'll see what I can do, Burke says. And back at the office, Deputy Burke types in the name Mulberry to his computer, and he gets a hit. This man has been missing since 2009.
Oh.
We cut to a red van driving down the road. It has a banner reading SantaCon on the side.
Oh, okay.
Inside this van is the rowdiest, drunkest group of people, all dressed as Santa Claus. Their poor driver looks like he wants to bang his head into a wall. God, I hate Christmas, he says, as one of the Santas leans over and dramatically kisses him on the cheek. The van pulls up outside a restaurant of sorts, and all the Santas pile on out and head inside, acting annoying as all hell. The waitress inside looks anything but happy to see this group. Hey, girl, I could make you my ho, 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 one of the Santas yells out.
Oh, my God. How have I not heard that one before?
I know, right?
No. It's not that funny. It's not that funny. It's just, like, sad that no one's used that enough because it's too easy, you know? Like, I'm shocked I haven't heard it, but I'm not going to laugh. I refuse.
I'm definitely not laughing. No. Listen up. The waitress yells over the chaos. The kitchen's closed, but best I can do is drinks. They're like, oh, hell yeah, works for us. But she clarifies, iced tea. That's what she can serve them.
Right.
They're disappointed, but they hang around anyway. Also worth noting that they're the only customers here right now. And back in the kitchen, the waitress takes a breather before readying the pitchers of iced tea because she's like, oh boy, this is going to be a fun time.
Yeah.
Now, one of the most pervy, creepy guys wanders back into the kitchen and immediately like puts his body up on her. And
this is why I didn't laugh at the joke because it's these type of people that make those jokes. Get out of here.
She gives him a swift elbow to the face and he falls to the ground.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, she says sarcastically just before the lights in the restaurant flicker. She turns around and sees that the guy she just elbowed is completely gone, but there is blood on the floor. A blood trail, actually, from where he had fallen into the walk-in freezer. She slowly approaches. Walking inside, she sees the man, dead on the floor, an icicle stabbed into his neck.
Oh, that's cute. I like an icicle death. It's very festive.
It's very festive. And, like, also, where's the murder weapon? Oh, I don't know. It melted.
It just melts. I didn't even think about that. That's good to know.
If we lock that in your memory. Just for next time.
Just in case.
The waitress screams, and then the freezer door slams behind her, trapping her inside. The rowdy group of Santas in the dining area are completely oblivious to all of this, but suddenly, two furry green hands make an appearance from behind a barrier near the door. They just kind of like peek up, and this catches mm-hmm. their attention. The mean one stands up from behind the partition, does some Art the Clown-esque miming, and locks the front door.
Okay.
The Santa group's all just kind of staring in silence. The mean one whips out a large plastic candy cane as one of the Santas comes back from his trip to the bathroom. He smiles at the silent group as he walks toward them before the candy cane hook finds itself around his neck. The mean one yanks hard, breaking the man's neck, and he falls dead to the floor.
Oh, with a plastic candy cane.
Uh-huh. He's resourceful.
Okay.
Now the Santas are gonna freak out, and pure chaos ensues as the Santas run around screaming, trying to find ways to escape. One Santa gets an axe to the head as he tries to hide in the kitchen. Someone dressed as an inflatable Christmas tree gets the candy cane to the stomach. The mean one jumps on one of the female Santa's heads, smashing it in the ground. The mean one's on a pure rampage, and no one is going to stop him.
Mm.
Every single Santa is murdered in a different way. Glasses to the head, Christmas lights around the throat, one is shoved into a meat grinder. It's so fun. It's, you know, there's a lot going on here.
This sounds like my score is going down.
Yeah. it's not going great for anyone here.
Oh, yeah.
Now, during the massacre, the waitress has still been trapped in the freezer, and the mean one actually leaves before she gets out. So she lives, but when she walks out into the dining area and sees everything that's happened, I'm sure she'll be scarred for life.
Okay. I thought you were going to say she just dies. She just sees everything.
She dies. I think that would be great.
I would love that.
At home that night, Cindy sees the news story for this diner massacre on TV.
Yeah.
Cindy felt her blood turn to ice at the sight. That's when she heard something go bump in the night.
Oh, the rhymes are back.
They are back. The lights in the house all go out, and let me just say, girly, she's not scared enough. She calmly walks over to the fuse box and flips the switch.
Oh, girl.
The lights come back on, but then immediately turn off again. This happens a few times. One of the times that the lights comes back up, we see the mean one standing in the window. Cindy sees him too. The mean one makes a mad dash for the door, and so does Cindy. He gets the door open enough to get his hands through, but Cindy shoves her weight into the door to keep it from opening more. She fights to keep the door closed as the mean one's hands flail from the crack in the doorway. Cindy's struggling too because Girly has fuzzy socks on, so she's like slipping as she's like trying to close the door.
I'm wearing fuzzy socks right now, and I'm just now thinking about how much of a hazard they really are.
Right? I actually
– Oh, my God.
I hate that I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, my God, maybe I don't – maybe I shouldn't wear maybe fuzzy socks.
We shouldn't, because what if the mean one is here?
Yes. Like, I don't like grippy socks, but they might be better.
I hate grippy socks.
Hate them.
But
they're very uncomfortable.
Now I'm going to be thinking about this. Okay.
This is important. Suddenly, a gunshot sounds and the door slams shut. After it closes, it immediately begins to shake again, and Cindy grabs her phone and hides behind a table. The door creaks open as Cindy lunges toward it, whacking the intruder in the head. Well, it's not the mean one. It's a man
Oh.
No. I wish.
No.
For her sake. It's a man that's honestly giving Santa without actually being Santa. He wears red. Oh. He's got a white beard. He has a red hat. You know the vibes.
What the heck?
And honestly, we had gotten a couple random shots of this man throughout the movie. It kind of seemed like he was just like always around, like observing from his car, you know?
Weird.
Who are you? Cindy asks in a panic. A guy who just saved your life, the man responds. You're going to have to learn to hit a lot harder than that, he jokes. Cindy's still just looking at him like, what the fuck? Like, who are you?
Yeah.
Get out of my house. So, got anything to drink? The man asks before we cut to the two of them at a bar called Horton's. Ha.
Okay.
Good one. I had to keep an eye on you, the man says as he downs a shot. I knew when you came to town that that thing would come back. The man pours another shot. This is the first person Cindy has met who also knows about the thing, so she's got questions. What is it? She asks. The Finch, the woman behind the bar interrupts, order for Mike Finch.
Oh.
Now, this is their way of covering up him saying the Grinch.
Oh my gosh. Okay, yeah. Yes.
He goes by a lot of names, the man continues, but to me, he's just the mean one.
Okay.
The man explains that the mean one really hates Christmas. He'll attack and kill anyone who tries to celebrate it.
Mm-hmm.
11 years ago, he tells us, my wife wanted to mail some presents to our nephew in Florida. We don't celebrate in town, but these gifts were heading cross-country. She took those wrapped packages out of the car and never made it to the post office. We see a flashback of an older woman taking some wrapped gifts from the trunk of her car and heading into the post office. Before she makes it there, the mean one runs out from the trees, slicing her right in two, there in the post office parking lot.
Wow.
The man tells us that he's been hunting him ever since, but the mean one is elusive, slippery, smart. He's hard to catch. He's a mean one, that Mr. Finch! The woman yells again. Last call for Mike Finch.
You've
definitely seen this before. This is like I don't want to call it a trope, but like the interrupting to cover something up is definitely a thing I've seen many times.
I have too. Bit more niche, but it happens.
It does happen a lot. Cindy asks if he'll come to the station with her and give a statement, but of course this guy is like, I've tried that. They don't listen. We make a cut to the station where the officer is Okay. Because I wrote, we make a cut to the station where the officer is shooting her down. And I was like, what?
Oh no. Shooting her down like
her.
Because he doesn't believe her.
Exactly. And I'm like, why would I ever have written that? That did not happen. No, he's shooting her down because that old doc is not to be trusted. He's crazy.
Right. Of course he is.
Wow. I really was like, how did I forget this part of the film? Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if this was just what happened next.
So we got shooting her. We got to the freaking station. Pew, pew, pew. Everyone's dead. Yeah. The end.
Yeah.
So the sheriff is getting real tired of hearing from her, too. He's tried to be patient on account of what she's been through, but he's really had enough. So Cindy's like, what about that massacre over at the diner? Maybe it's connected. The sheriff says, nah, that's state police territory. What do you even do? She asks. I protect this town. The sheriff yells, truly angry now. Sir, I'm not trying to do your job, Cindy says calmly, but I think one of us should. Which, honestly, great line. I kind of love that.
Yeah, I love that.
Mm-hmm. The sheriff tells her to get out. Now, Deputy Burke overheard all of this and follows Cindy outside. I'm sorry, but he's right, he tells her. We don't have any jurisdiction out there, which I guess, but like I feel like the sheriff's
But he's
not
coming into town, so like you gotta keep an eye out.
Mm-hmm. Cindy is disappointed to hear that he too is going to do nothing,
mm-hmm.
but not so fast. Deputy Burke says he'll go take a look at the mountain and see what he can find. And so he does.
Oh.
He's got his little hiking backpack, rope, grappling hook. And we cut to him like literally like descending into a cave on a rope. I guess this man's got climber knowledge. Yeah, he knows his shit. Down at the bottom of the cave, Deputy Burke finds a bunch of wallets, like Cindy said he would.
Mm-hmm.
He picks them up and starts shoving them in his pockets. As he's digging through the wallets, he comes across a white sheet on the ground that clearly appears as though it's covering up a dead body.
Oh.
Deputy Burke quickly whips the sheet back to reveal, yes, a dead body, completely frozen, covered in garland and candy canes.
Oh.
I know. The deputy throws himself back in fear when Jingle Bells starts to play. Deputy Burke landed on a musical reindeer toy that plays Jingle Bells. Now, this toy actually looks like Max. It has like the singular antler in the middle. So, it's a little Max call out. He starts panicking because, this thing is making a lot of noise and he wants it to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
In the background, we see a shadow pass by a doorway and then hear a loud sound that catches Deputy Burke's attention. He quickly hides around a corner. The mean one comes shuffling through, dragging the body of someone dressed as Santa, maybe someone from the diner, and then just drops it there on the floor. Deputy Burke wants to see if he can sneak a peek at what's going on, so he leans around the corner to get a better look. In the process, he kneels on the reindeer toy for a second time. He starts panicking again before throwing the toy to another corner of the cave.
Just throw it off the cliff. Like, there's got to be, you're on a mountain, you can throw it so many places.
We are in, like, a weird cave ditch thing. But, there's a lot of places he could throw it still. Okay. The mean one heads for the toy, and Burke tries to make a run for it in the other direction. Unfortunately, he's an idiot, so he trips immediately, and I guess his window for escape has closed because he grabs a nearby white sheet and covers himself with it, appearing to be another dead body.
Okay.
The mean one comes back over with the reindeer toys still singing Jingle Bells, throws it on the ground, and stomps on it till it stops working. He then goes back to work dragging that dead body through the cave. Once he's gone, Deputy Burke jumps up and makes a run for it. At the entrance to the cave, he runs smack dab into Santa Man Doc, who's holding a gun.
What the heck?
The deputy grabs him and tells him to drop his weapon. "Are you insane? Let me go," Doc says before giving Burke a whack. Burke lets him go, and the men are both like, "What the fuck is going on? Like, who are you? Yeah. What are you doing here?"
Yeah.
Burke asks him who he is, and he says, "Matthias Zeus," he says. "Zeus, like the god?" Burke asks. He's like, "Yeah, but everyone around here just calls me Doc." Doc goes to leave because, you know, it's getting dark out. Burke's all out of breath from everything he just experienced, but he calls after Doc before he can walk away. Mm-hmm. "Matthias! Matthias! Mr. Dr. Zeus!" he calls after him.
Oh, okay. I wish I could say that was worth it. Like, the bit is, like, too long for it to pay off. But,
Dr. Zeus.
That happened. Dr. Zeus, he...
Dr. Zeus.
How did I not? It just didn't hit me at all. He's like, "Oh no, it didn't hit Doc. Me. My last name is Zeus." Okay.
No, it didn't hit me either.
Until it was like spelled out. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, "Oh."
Well, you were a few shots deep.
I was, so maybe I have more of an excuse, but still,
right?
Dr. Zeus is firm with Burke. If you want to live, go home, and most importantly, don't celebrate the holidays. Burke wants to know what it is he's hunting up here, but Dr. Zeus knows he won't believe him, so he gets in his car and just drives off.
Mm-hmm.
Later that night, Burke sits with Cindy by a fire pit in her backyard. He tells her what he saw, and Cindy is honestly just relieved that someone believes her finally. The two of them get into some casual chit-chat that turns, you know, a little flirty.
Mm-hmm.
Burke admits that the homemade soup he gave her the other day, it was store-bought. And Cindy's like, "Now why would you do that?" "I wanted to impress you," he says. "Well, I'm impressed," she responds, and they sit there all googly-eyed and like, mm-hmm. Eerie piano music comes in as we fade to later in the night. Cindy begins to undress in the bathroom before getting into the shower. She closes slightly see-through curtain before stepping under the water and closing her eyes. The door creaks lightly, and Cindy doesn't notice. Through the curtain, we can see a figure getting closer to the shower. I can't say this part with a straight face. Sorry.
Oh, no.
It's not even that bad. Like, it's just the curtain opens and, it's just Burke. And they're going to make out in the shower for a little while the eerie piano continues to play.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. And suddenly another figure appears beyond the curtain and a furry green arm reaches to whip it open. The mean one whips open the curtain and lands two hard punches on Burke's face as blood splatters everywhere. Cindy sits up in bed out of breath. Nightmares again. I just think that her having a dream about making out with Deputy Burke in the shower is really funny. But anyway.
Another nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
It's too many. I want one per movie unless the movie is specifically about dreams and nightmares.
Oh, I agree.
Because I was fully ready for that to be real.
Oh,
so
me too.
I'm like a little sad.
I know, me too.
But it is kind of funny that she's dreaming that.
It really was.
Yeah.
Nightmares made it hard to know what's real and what's fake. But Cindy found a mission now that she's fully awake. "I'm going to kill it," she says to herself.
Oh.
And this is score check two. Yeah. What's up? How you feeling? Okay, I'll be so honest with you. This movie's hard to like give yourself a score because it's basically just the Grinch running around massacring everybody in the most ridiculous ways.
It's interesting because like you'd think for our podcast like a straight slasher film would be ideal, but sometimes they can be tricky because like it depends on who the slasher is and if they just like a bop 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 and through people the whole time. It's like, well, I guess I'm dead.
I think the people who could say that they would survive this, if you don't celebrate the holidays, then you're good. Because he gets mad about Christmas decor, but I literally put up Christmas decor yesterday. So I would die in that
scenario.
What's
sad? This year I don't think I'm going to have the time to put up my own Christmas decor, but I did spend time decorating the outside of my mom's house yesterday. So effectively I just killed them, I guess.
Oh.
But I'm safe.
Okay.
Because I haven't had the time to put decorations up for myself.
Would you look at that?
No, but I do celebrate, so I'm not going to count that. Man, yeah, it's everyone
it's
who's
mess.
Died, it's like, I guess I'm also dead, you know?
Right.
So I'll put myself down to like a 39.
I put 39! Look at us! Oh, I love when this happens. This is happening a lot more often lately.
It is.
We get more and more insane.
I'm waiting. Imagine at this point we have to be like, it has to be a whole episode where every check-in is the same.
Uh-huh.
I feel like that could happen one day. We're really on that track.
I love that for us. That's amazing. Look at us go.
Yeah.
So it is montage time. Cindy ties a green dummy dressed as Santa to a tree in her backyard and practices punching it.
Okay.
Yep. She learns how to shoot a gun. She sets bear traps. She turns ornaments into bombs.
Now Wait, how does she know how to do that?
Okay, like, so basically what she does is, she, like, you know, like the bobble, like ball ornaments?
Yeah.
She just, like, puts oil or gas in them. And I guess, like, that's all she does, but somehow that's a bomb.
Okay.
Just, it's a bomb, just trust me.
We all know how to make bombs then, I guess.
Apparently. Now she's at a hardware store when Burke shows up. She's smiling big as she adds rope to her basket already containing an axe and some other items. You're in a good mood, Burke says. I am. I really am, she responds.
She's going to look so crazy.
It feels like a fog has been lifted. I know exactly what I need to do. Burke looks concerned as Cindy grabs a dozen wooden skewers off the shelf and heads to the checkout.
Well, yes.
More montage. She's improving, landing punches, landing shots, getting stronger. We also see her setting up Christmas decor in her home, placing some of those ornaments filled with gas on the tree. And it seems she's rigging some garland. It's giving Home Alone type energy.
I was going to say, this whole montage is giving very much Home Alone.
Absolutely. Also during this montage, we see Burke following leads at the station, discovering more missing persons and their corresponding wallets. The montage finally ends with Cindy landing a kick in the dummy's chest, sending it flying from the tree.
Wow.
At the bar, Dr. Zeus drinks whiskey from the bottle and kisses a picture of his wife before placing it back in his pocket. He heads out to his car and hops inside. He's kind of fumbling with his keys a bit. This man should not be driving. Just before he can put his keys in the ignition, sirens blare behind him. Dr. Zeus lets out an "Oh shit!" as the sheriff walks up to the car, putting his hand out for Doc's license and registration. Doc just reaches his hand out to the sheriff's and shakes it. "How are you doing?" he asks. "Better than you," the sheriff responds. We're going to leave that there for the time being. Over at Egg Heaven, which I believe is the diner.
What?
Oh. Okay. Yeah, see, I took a moment there too. I think that's the diner that they're at throughout the movie.
That's normal.
A man named Don closes up shop for the night. This looks like the diner where Cindy was having coffee earlier in the movie. Oh, I wrote that down. Sorry. Okay, I'm jumping the gun. A second man comes rolling a cart into the back room. Seems like this was something Don had been waiting on. "Thanks, Charlie," he yells, and Charlie leaves. Don opens up the box on the cart, and it's full of Christmas decorations. "What the hell?" he says. Clearly, this is not what he was expecting, so he immediately picks up the phone. "Charlie, it's Don," he says into the phone. "You dropped off the wrong package. I ordered bell peppers, not jingle bells." He picks up some of the jingle bells and rings them into the phone. He tells Charlie to come back and get this package. The front door chimes as it opens. "Sorry, we're closed," Don yells toward the front of the store, hanging up his phone call with Charlie. Don turns and walks away, and behind where he was standing, we can see the Mean One silhouette through a window on a door. He's wagging his finger in a no-no-no sort of motion. And Don heads up to the front of the shop where he finds that the front door is open. He looks around but doesn't see anyone, so he just shuts it and locks it.
Death sentence.
This next shot is very much, I think, a call to, like, the original Grinch. We get, like, a close-up of, like, the Grinch kind of, like, gliding along the floor, like, with his hands, like, kind of doing, like, a little spidery tip-tap motion along the ground. I think that's, like, from the original Grinch. It's kind of gross looking. He's just, like, gliding. It's weird. A loud noise catches Don's attention. The box of Christmas decoration has fallen over, so he walks over to investigate. An insert shot tells us that the Mean One has picked up a cleaver from the kitchen counter. The Mean One creeps up behind Don, who turns around just in time to let out a scream before receiving a cleaver to the face. That's not enough for the Mean One, though. He takes that cleaver and chops up Don's body into many pieces before putting all of those pieces into the Christmas decor box. Yeah.
Another 0%.
I know, exactly. We're screwed.
Yeah.
A little while later, Charlie arrives to grab that box that Don had told him to come back for. Charlie walks into the shop calling for Don, but when he gets no response, he just grabs that box, places it on the trolley, and takes it with him. At the police station, the sheriff leads Doc to a holding cell. "Come on, Sheriff. It's ridiculous. I didn't do anything," a very drunk Dr. Zeus says. "Twice the legal limit," the sheriff responds. Doc tries to explain that he just wants to help catch the monster, but the sheriff's going to have none of that. We're going to fade over to a new scene sometime later now. Mayor McBean is hurriedly putting some bags into her trunk.
Maybe she's going to die. Okay. Ooh. I was like sad that she was here again, but then I remembered what it could mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's surprised when she looks up and sees the sheriff sitting on his patrol car. "Going somewhere?" he asks.
Mm.
She says she's heading up to Tahoe to be with her sister through the new year. The sheriff seems unconvinced. "What do you want, Sheriff?" she asks firmly. "I want to know if you did something that'll bite me in the ass if somebody looks too closely."
Oh.
Mayor McBean folds her arms across her chest. "Who's looking?" she asks kind of smugly. "Trained eyes," the sheriff responds. "Well," the mayor starts, "get them to look elsewhere." We learn that the mayor used to be a deputy under the current sheriff here, but she says she can't do his job for him. "The truth is bound to see the light of day," the sheriff says. "Then extend the night," the mayor responds angrily before heading for her car door. She turns back to the sheriff saying, "If I burn, I'm pulling you into the pyre." She gets into her car, slams the door, and drives away.
Okay.
Over at Cindy's, she's just sitting on her stairs looking at Doc's drawing of the mean one. "Maybe it's because his head isn't screwed on quite right," she says. "Maybe it's because his shoes are too tight. Maybe his heart is two sizes too small." A knock comes from the front door. "Cindy, it's Burke," we hear from the other side. "Come in," she yells. Burke comes in out of breath. "You're not going to believe what I found," he says. He pulls his research out of his bag. Essentially, what he has learned is that every single person that went missing was a hiker.
Mm-hmm.
He pulls up Facebook photos from some of the missing people, and in the background of these photos, we can see a blurry-ass, terribly Photoshopped version of the mean one lurking in the shadows. It's actually wild that they didn't just take these photos. I don't understand what they did, but it's great.
Yeah.
Burke also shows us a website for hiking in Newville, the same one Cindy used earlier in the film. It's weird because this site is blocking their IP address, so Burke had to dig. But guess what he found? The website belongs to none other than Mayor McBean. She's been luring these people to their death. Dun, dun, dun.
Whoa. Ew.
What?
Is she just like purging the city of people she doesn't deem good enough for her better tomorrow or whatever the heck she's talking about?
Ooh. Interesting theory. I like that theory.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the mayor seems to have run off and Burke hasn't been able to locate her. Cindy heads upstairs and Burke follows after her. Here he discovers Cindy's plans. She's got the whole corkboard red string going on. She's got weapons. She's got her ornament bombs. "You're not going after that thing, are you?" Burke asks. "I'm not going to be a victim anymore," she says. Burke thinks this is a crazy idea.
Well, yeah.
Cindy gets offended at the word crazy. For 20 years, they convinced me that I was crazy, she says. Uh-huh. "But I finally know the truth, and I'm not going to be fooled anymore." She starts to gather her stuff because she's ready to go. Burke tries to convince her not to do this. She's going to get herself killed. But Cindy's done. She wants justice.
Mm-hmm.
Burke leaves in an angry, disappointed, and defeated state as Cindy grabs her bag and her gun. "When leaving behind both our fears and our sorrows, remember, nights get real dark before brighter tomorrows." Mayor McBean is driving her car down an isolated road at night in a very panicked state when suddenly the car breaks down. As she slows to a stop, her car radio turns on by itself, full blast, playing Christmas music. "No, no, 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 stop, stop, stop," she yells, whacking the radio, but it keeps playing. She cautiously gets out of her car with a wrench and goes to check the hood. She looks in there for like 2 seconds before slamming the hood back down, and this reveals the mean one standing just behind her.
Yes.
He lunges at her and takes a big old bite out of her cheek. Yum, yum.
Oh! You said yum yum. Did you write that in there?
Yeah. Sometimes I just write shit. I don't know what I'm doing.
Took a bite out of her cheek. Yum yum.
Why not?
Oh, the cheek is odd. I don't know why I'm stuck on that. Just a bite
like
out of a cheek is odd. Yeah.
Yeah, yum. Little chunk of skin, it's fine. Yeah. Mayor McBean tries to fight back and run away, but the mean one is just too powerful. He throws her to the ground before taking out a roll of re-elect Margie stickers. He uses the roll to cover her mouth and then drags her back to the trunk of the car. He throws her in, but not all the way. He leaves her head resting on the outer edge of the trunk before repeatedly banging the trunk down on her head, completely decapitating her.
Well,
I mean, are we mad? No. Her severed head lays on the ground with a sticker placed over her lips. In the background, the mean one drags away the rest of her body. Meanwhile, at the station, Doc is still in his cell asking the sheriff to let him out. "What are you trying to do here, sheriff?" Doc asks. "Save the town," an off-screen voice says. "Like always." In walks Deputy Burke.
"Oh.
No matter the cost," he says, giving the sheriff a cold stare. He reveals that he tracked the IP address of the website. "I thought that was buried deep," the sheriff sighs, defeated. "You and the mayor," Deputy Burke asks. "Not at first," he replies. "I really thought it was a man." Insert a flashback of little Cindy's drawing of the mean one here. Uh-huh. "But then the murders kept occurring every year after that," he explains. A new flashback moment. The sheriff in the mean one's cave, searching with a flashlight, calling for someone named Stephanie. He hears some crying deeper in the cave and comes across Stephanie, two bows stabbed into her eyeballs. The mean one suddenly appears behind her and starts gnawing on her neck. The sheriff saw the whole thing. "Once I knew what it was," present-day sheriff says, "I tried to feed it." We see the sheriff putting a Christmas cloak on a goat and leaving it on the hills near the mean one's den.
Okay. Okay. Poor goat.
Seconds later, as the sheriff hides behind a tree, we hear the growling of the mean one as he devours the goat.
Mm-hmm.
"The next year, he had the taste for a different kind of meat," the sheriff explains. "I couldn't stop it." "So you made a deal with the devil," Burke asks. "Not me, Margie. Once she became mayor, she had a plan." We get a flash of the website. The deputy is appalled to hear that the sheriff went along with this, but the sheriff defends himself by saying that his job is to protect the people of this town, and that's what he's been doing. So essentially, the mayor was trying to get the tourists. You know, the people coming to town to hike the mountains. That's their sacrifice.
That's a choice.
It really is.
You would think, just like business mindset as the mayor, that she wouldn't want there to be a track record of all the tourists dying at this town.
Right.
Because, like, no one's going to want to come anymore.
You would think.
But okay.
Deputy Burke shames the sheriff for what he's done, for lying to Cindy, for making her think she'd gone crazy.
Right.
He slams a piece of paper, Cindy's drawing, into the sheriff's chest and walks away. "Where are you going?" he asks. "Hunting," Burke replies before turning to leave.
Mm.
Once he's gone, the sheriff places the keys on the edge of the cell for Doc and walks away.
Mm.
Back at home, Cindy's putting the final touches on her Christmas decorations, aka her traps. She hears a crash from the front of the house. The danger was rising as the battle grew nearer, but who's hunting who was becoming less and less clearer. Cindy grabs a knife and a flashlight and heads outside to investigate the sound. As she tiptoes through the snow, she's suddenly jump-scared by a figure falling from a tree in front of her. It's Dr. Zeus, and he's dangling from a what? I don't know what that's supposed to be. He's dangling by his feet. Let's go with that. I don't know what I wrote.
What in the world? So he was just, he got out of jail, and then he came to try to help her, but he didn't even get a chance to, and now he's hanging up by his feet.
Because I think he stepped in one of her
in
traps.
A tree?
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of funny. Yeah. I thought, like, the mean one was already here, but that makes more sense.
Yeah. Cindy's like, "What are you doing?" And Doc tells her that he came to warn her that her boyfriend is headed for the mountains.
Yeah.
"He what? Why would he do that?" Cindy asks nervously. "Why do you think?" Doc responds. Cindy pauses for a moment, a smile spreading across her face. "Aw, that's so sweet," she says.
Romantic.
"Yeah, let's just see if he's still sweet tomorrow," Doc yells, snapping her out of it. She quickly cuts Doc down from the tree and runs back for the house. Well, Deputy Burke certainly is at the mountains, searching around with his gun and a flashlight. Things are tense. "Mr. Mean One, come out wherever you are," Burke calls out into the darkness.
Why are you doing that? Like, he's just, if he dies, it's on him. I'm 100% for him.
This doesn't seem to be working. So he starts singing Jingle Bells.
Oh.
He hears some rustling, so he runs toward the noise.
Oh.
Cindy and Doc come flying up to the scene where they can see the deputy's car parked. They jump out and hurry after him. Now, Burke, it's dark, so he manages to step right into a bear trap, and it gets him good. He yells and says, "Oh, shit, he set a trap!" The panic sets in as he tries to fight against the trap, and the growling and screeching of the mean one gets closer. He tries to reach for his gun that he dropped, but it's no use. It's too far away.
He dropped?
Yeah. Yeah, he dropped it. When he sits back up, he comes face to face with the mean one, holding some mistletoe and making kissy faces. The mean one leans toward him, but suddenly two gunshots go off, sending the mean one running.
Mm.
It's the sheriff. "We don't have a lot of time," he says, pulling the bear trap from Burke's ankle. He gets scared, but he'll be back meaner than ever. The sheriff starts to help Burke out of the cave when a growl echoes from deeper in the cave somewhere. "Keep moving. Mm-hmm. You're going to make it," the sheriff says to Burke. Burke's confused. "What are you doing?" he asks. "I took an oath to protect this town. You are part of my town, son," he says before heading into the cave. Okay. Burke yells after him, but he's in no state to follow. He begins to drag himself toward the entrance when Cindy and Burke appear. They grab him and begin to lead him out of the cave. Meanwhile, the sheriff's deep in the cave, singing "We Wish You a Merry Christmas" as he fires bullets into the darkness. This is the mean one, everyone.
Yeah. Yep.
It seems like he's actually shooting at the mean one, but he always manages like to dodge at the last second.
Of course.
In a blur, we see the mean one jump at the sheriff and hear the sheriff scream. That scream echoes back to Burke's Indian Doc. "Wait, wait. We have to help him," Burke says. This part's kind of strange. So, like, Cindy runs back like a solid 10 feet. Yeah, this part. This part.
Just this part.
Cindy runs back like a solid 10 feet and grabs for the sheriff's hand and is like, "Come on, sheriff." And then she, like, realizes it's just his arm.
Oh.
She's like, she picks up his arm. Okay. And I don't know how it got there.
But it's literally where did it come from?
I don't know, but it's there. And she's like, "Oh, LOLJK, like, we gotta go." And the three of them head back for the exit. So they make it out of the cave and back to the deputy's cruiser, helping him inside. Mm-hmm. Cindy starts to blame herself for everything while Burke talks her down.
Aww.
"Everything I touch dies," she says dramatically. "I'm not dead," Burke says. "Yet," Cindy replies.
Mm-hmm.
From outside the cruiser, Doc says, "This doesn't end tonight. It starts all over again next year." Burke looks into Cindy's eyes. "It's got to be you," he says. "Go get him."
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I think it's kind of crazy. So when Burke went to kill the mean one, Cindy did everything in her power to stop him because he would die. But now Cindy's going to go, and he's like not only okay with it, but he encourages it. He's like, "Yeah,
yeah,
you go by yourself and kill it."
Yeah. I also like this is very much a trope in fantasy. Like, it has to be you. You're the one. You're destined for this.
Right.
And I hate bringing that shit into horror. I hate it.
It's got to be you.
Yeah.
Doc takes Burke to the hospital while Cindy heads back home for the final showdown.
Oh, yes.
She stands outside the house in a child's pink nightgown and dramatically plugs in the Christmas lights.
Why?
The pink nightgown is Cindy Lou Who callback.
Of course. But
it just looks really weird. Yeah. While the folks down in Newville were asleep in their beds, the day had arrived for the mean one to get dead. Cindy's home sits glowing in the dark while she sleeps on the couch. Well, of course not. The mean one appears outside her window and grins in at her. He tiptoes across the porch, makes his way to the roof, down the chimney, and into the house. He creeps toward the sleeping Cindy.
Wait, so she didn't put a trap in the chimney?
No, I guess not.
What?
So
she put traps everywhere but the chimney where he always comes down.
It makes so much sense. Just trust me. So he slowly reaches for her face. But what's this? Cindy's awake. Hmm. Guess who, she says, throwing the blanket off her body, sending a kick into the mean one's chest.
Mm-hmm.
He flies across the room, finding himself in front of the window where a neon green laser sits upon his torso. Gunshots go off, nailing him. Cindy does a rolling backwards somersault off the couch.
Okay.
With a gleam in his eye and a trigger finger that itched, the hunter proclaimed, "Merry Christmas, you green bitch." Doc is set up somewhere across the way with his sniper rifle as he sends bullet after bullet into the mean one's green body.
Yep, nice.
The green one turns around with a screech to see Well, to see Cindy with a shotgun decorated like a candy cane, and she's got all these bullet missile things strapped to her bulletproof vest that she's now wearing. She cocks the gun and goes to shoot, but the mean one magically disappears. Neither Cindy or Doc saw where he went. Okay. Looking through the scope. I've been trying to make this interesting. Looking through the scope, Doc is suddenly jump scared when the mean one jumps right in front of him. The scare makes him shoot, but the shot does not hit the mean one. Instead, the mean one tackles Doc to the ground and breaks his arm in half. This is all he has time for, though, because Cindy arrives to save the day. She takes a shot and scares the mean one off long enough for her to check on Doc. Doc insists that he's fine.
What? She didn't kill him?
Nope, because nobody has good aim. She needs to focus on finding the mean one, right? So Doc's like, go.
Yeah.
I'm fine. Just go.
It has to be you.
She creeps around the house with her gun out when the mean one jumps out from the darkness. She lands more bullets in his fur and sends him walking backward into a bear trap. But oh no, she's out of bullets. And the mean one breaks free.
Oh my God.
She's got to use her Christmas light bat as like it makes like lightsaber noises as she swings it.
What is the function of a Christmas light bat? Why?
It has to like, look pretty. It's literally a bat wrapped in Christmas lights.
Okay. What's it plugged into?
They're battery powered. I don't know.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Eventually the mean one gets a hold of that. So she's got to use one of her ornament bombs now, which again is just gas.
Oil.
So she runs away from the mean one in slow motion and does like one of those dramatic 180 like turns in the air and throws the bomb at him and explodes. And
why does it explode?
Because there's gas in it, Cassie.
I thought there was going to be like fire and we were going to throw them at the fire to make an explosion, but there's no fire. It just explodes just from being oil.
It's very advanced technology, okay? So this doesn't kill him, of course, but it does give Cindy enough time to run inside. Oh, yeah, I think we were outside. I don't know where we are right now. She thinks she's safe, but no, the mean one slipped down the chimney again and they're going to go at it.
Is that the only way he knows how to enter a building?
Apparently. So the mean one, he's punching Cindy when some really weird distorted Christmas music starts playing from somewhere.
That's
fun. It's Doc outside. He's got his phone held up to the cruiser's megaphone and it's playing super loud. Yahoo Duray, motherfucker, Doc yells.
What?
I don't know. Cindy lights some garland on fire and it acts like a fuse heading for the bomb-covered Christmas tree.
Uh-huh.
It reaches and boom, it explodes.
Yeah.
The mean one lays weak on the floor, giving Cindy the opportunity to reach for a knife.
Okay.
She straddles the mean one, holding the knife above him. He doesn't fight back.
Oh, good.
It's now that Cindy notices something. The mean one is still wearing the Santa necklace she gave him all those years ago.
Oh my God. And nobody fucking cares, and she stabs him in the head, and he dies.
You kept this? All this time? The mean one gives a weak nod. Why, Santa Claus? Why? What happened to you? She asks sadly as the mean one's body begins to relax, weakening. Cassie looks really upset right now, guys. She looks really upset.
I just can't believe this is happening. Like, I can't believe I didn't take shots for the podcast recording.
Girl, it's a good thing I did So we flash back to that first scene and see once again the mother trying to protect Cindy. She screams, "Monster!" at the mean one, and that's when he retaliates. In this version of the scene, we can see that the mean one looks upset. He didn't mean to do it. "Monster!" baby Cindy yells. The mean one looks defeated and then angry. Modern day Cindy begins to cry while holding the knife. She caresses the mean one's face and gives him a kiss on the cheek. "I forgive you," she says. The mean one cries too. Suddenly we hear the sound of a heartbeat and the mean one grabs at his chest. He looks scared. Cindy is confused. "Go!" the mean one yells. Bang! His heart explodes and he dies.
What? I want to be done.
We're so close, I promise.
I'm crying because of how bad it is.
I told you. Cindy stares at him in the silence. We know that his heart grew 3 sizes that day. Justice is poetic when it happens that way. Breaking news! A newscaster has a story for us on TV. Oh. Meanwhile, mania is sweeping the nation. After this image went viral from the small town of Newville, we see an image of the mean one that looks really similar to that. You know that one image of Buddy the Elf in Elf where he's like walking through Central Park? Like that's what it looks like, but it's the Grinch. We see like different influencers talking about it and like people are like, I'm going to go out and find the mean one. And everyone's like, it's become like a trend on the social medias. You know what I mean? With the danger behind them, the town found new life. People found joy in both tinsel and lights. It came with boxes and ribbons and toys with tinsel and garland and new Yuletide joys. For the town filled with tourists carrying cameras and guns as folks hiked the mountains in search of the mean one. The beast had been slain and some wrongs became right because Christmas returned almost overnight. Cindy and Burke walk arm in arm at the town's Christmas festival where they talk about this new town legend, the mean one. People are really coming here to hike, Cindy says. People like a good scare, Burke responds. People are weird, Cindy says. They do agree. It's good business for the town, though. So that's good. Apparently the feds came and cleaned up the whole mess, so no one will ever really know what happened that they'll never find him. Burke and Cindy share a kiss as we fade away. And so ends our story with holiday cheer. And they all lived happily ever after. Well, at least until next year. A screech from the mean one echoes over the town. The end.
He died. He's not coming back next year.
I don't know. Maybe he's going to magically appear. I don't know.
No.
I don't know.
I don't maybe think so. Maybe. This is me begging them.
I fucking hope not.
Begging them to not somehow bring him back for the mean one too.
Oh, so that is the mean one. It is really Hallmark Christmas meets horror meets the Grinch.
Oh, sure. The romance is definitely there. Very cheesy.
Like the mayor and the sheriff being the bad guys is like so Hallmark coded.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like that little addition to the plot that the mayor and the sheriff were like feeding the mean one. I think that's fun.
I enjoyed that. I thought that was good.
Yeah. And then everything else.
Happened. It happened.
Yeah. The way that this final showdown. First of all, let me fucking tell you something. The Grinch would not be dying from how much I love it. Okay? I would not forgive this person, this monster, for killing my parents. Mm-hmm. Just, and it's what basically like she misjudged him, so then he had a villain origin story and just started killing people.
I mean, that is the origin of the Grinch, the real Grinch, but he just doesn't murder people.
Well, yeah,
he gets bullied and like as a little baby Grinch.
See, if he became an asshole because I misjudged him, I could forgive him for being an asshole, but I'm not gonna forgive him for killing my parents, and multiple other people just because I thought. You know, why was he even in her house in the beginning? Was he just really wanted to be Santa?
I don't know what he was doing.
Like, I'm so sorry that I misjudged you for breaking into my home on Christmas. I'm so sorry.
I don't know what he was doing. But he was there.
What was he doing? So, but final survivability.
Are we doing a third
act? Oh, yeah, third act survivability. I am putting a lot of weight on like the final showdown and genuinely we know that he comes down through the chimney. Set up your bombs in the chimney, have your AK-47 locked and loaded and just start blasting the fireplace. Like why did you set everything up everywhere when you know he's coming through the chimney? He even did it twice. The idiot probably would not die the first time from an explosion. He would go outside and then come back down this chimney and get exploded again.
True story.
I really think luring him is very easy. Knowing where he's going to enter is just a huge, huge advantage.
True.
And I think I could take him. Like knowing those two things, knowing I can lure him right here and he's going to be sitting there. I can do that.
Fair.
So I'm going to give myself literally just for her, like an 80% for that final showdown. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes to what, just the mayor? Was it just the mayor in the third?
I feel like there was another one.
You'd think.
There were people just dying everywhere.
Yeah. The mayor, so. I guess, sure, I'll be lower. You know what? I'm going to give myself like a 50% for the third.
Okay.
The third act. My overall, I'll have to calculate. But what did you do for your third?
I did 45. So we were like pretty similar.
Yeah. Interesting.
So I'll calculate.
Wait, why?
Okay, I have my...
What was your thought process as far as raising from the second to the third?
Honestly, just because, like you said, it's like an actual fight mostly in this, as opposed to he snuck up behind them and stabbed them with a pole.
Well, right. Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
Like the Santa Claus massacre in... The second act was like, everyone's dying.
My final weighted score comes out to a 52%.
Okay. Mine was 47. Yeah. Our final score comes to a 50%.
50%.
Smack dab in the middle. Actually, I think it's kind of funny that's 50 because, like, I don't know. I feel like there's going to be a good number of people who are like, well, I don't even celebrate Christmas. So
right.
I'm not going to – don't you dare ever give yourself 100. If you give yourself 100 on those – I actually don't look at those scores that are submitted. That's not my job.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But if you guys are putting hundreds in there, stop it. Stop it. Anyway.
Like, actually, I don't have a chimney, so I think I'm safe 100%. I change it.
Okay, that's it. Honestly, I don't either, so.
Wow. What a day this has been.
Yeah. So I hope everyone enjoyed this shit show.
I really enjoyed your retelling of the third act.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was my favorite part. I just really could not believe what was happening.
Mm-hmm. This was one of those ones where I just kind of had to just bluntly tell you exactly what was happening, because
power
just that
through.
In of itself is just something special.
Wow.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for hanging with us today. As always, please check us out over on Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. There you can also find the link to our Discord where you too can submit your own score. So let us know. Would you survive?